Welcome to the Wisdom of Women show. We are dedicated to amplifying the voice of women in business. A new model of leadership is emerging. We are here to amplify the voices of women in a way. I am your host, Coco Selman, five-time founder, impact investor, creator of Force for Good System. Thank you for joining us today as we illuminate the to unlocking opportunities and prosperity for women-led enterprises by amplifying the voice, wisdom. Today, we have an AI literacy luminary in our midst. Dipti Bedhay is the co-founder and CEO of Little Lit. That's spelled L-I-T-T-L-E. L-I-T. Little Lit is a category-defining AI platform, teaching kids to master AI as a life skill through the world's first AI literacy curriculum, safe personalized AI tutors, and a creative tool for children aged 6 to 14. So Dipti is a two-time founder and former product leader at Microsoft, Dell, and Pay by Phone. She has built products used by more than, get this, folks, 500 million people worldwide, blending her expertise as an AI product strategist and certified instructional designer. She is the author of Full Child AI, a pioneering framework for empowering young learners to explore and build with technology safely and ethically. As a passionate advocate for women and girls in AI and the mother of a neurodivergent child, Dipti champions inclusive, responsible AI designed to reflect diverse learning needs. Through Little Lit, she is pioneering a future where every child can confidently engage with AI, closing the digital divide and creating a generation of ethical, creative AI natives. Welcome, Dipti.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for the intro, Coco.
I always like to start out with a book written by a woman that has significantly influenced your life.
Right. That was a hard one to pick. There were a lot of great ones. But the one that I think has really influenced me is Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. It's really one of my favorites. It made a huge impact on me. It validated a lot of choices that I have made in my life. And I think her whole thought process about women need to lean in. They need to get that seat at the table. They need to climb. Whenever you feel that it's time for you to step back because of personal commitments or any other forces, that is the time when you actually lean in. I think that's really a radical idea, but a very important one. And if we think about AI, I do want to connect it with why this is really opportune at this moment is we lived through hundreds of years of disadvantage because we were women, because we started out with a certain narrative and then we had to unnarrate it, right? And build our own. And now LLMs are trained with hundreds of years of information and are carrying that bias within them. And if at this moment we do not play an active role in both building AI and using it and shaping it, we're going to have to live with that for another 100 years. So this is the time to lean into AI. This is the time to really lead that charge. And so that's kind of why I also feel this is the book for the moment from that sense.
I love it. You know, and I'll just say it. I loved Lean In also. And there were some like people that didn't go along with that idea of leaning in. There was some...
Yep.
Some sort of pushback. And
yes,
I agree with you. Like I'm a mother and I have a family and I took some time off when my kids were young, but I've always been engaged and with my professional world. And I don't know, you got to lean in. Sometimes there's spaces when it's harder than others, right?
Yeah. And when she talks about a couple of different things, like taking a break, I think there is I don't know the exact words, but she talks about how it's not a ladder, but it's like a monkey bar, right? And so sometimes we might change our direction and have to go from here to here to keep going. I think there are so many amazing things that she says in the book that are quite accommodating to all different choices women can make. And so I also was a little stumped and sad that some people kind of had some discomfort with it. But of course, there's always going to be different opinions and we have to all kind of
go. Yes. Yes. You know, so I would love to sort of get to know you a little more, because I know just from doing the research that I did on your background and what drives you and your success in your family too, that you're a very special human. So I'm wondering if you could share with us moments of your life that you feel like have really shaped the human being.
Yeah.
That you are, and if there's, you know, three moments that you could bring forward to help us understand the big moments of fear, overcoming things, the big moments of greatness. About you, for your moment.
Yeah. No, I think that's a hard one. I think I'll go chronologically, because your whole life shapes you, and even some experiences, I'm 42 now, but some experiences way back kind of shape you for who you are. So when I was 16, I was giving my 10th grade exam, which back in India is a big deal. That's kind of how you graduate high school, not in the 12th grade over there. I belong to a family where everybody is an engineer, everybody is a doctor. And so there was a very set path for me, and I was totally bought into it. And I knew that I was going to do my 10th grade and I was going to get into this big engineering college, and it was all set for me. And it was pretty much the norm, follow the set path kind of a structure. Then after giving three of my papers, I actually had meningitis and I missed my whole board exams, and it threw everything for a toss. Suddenly here I was expecting to score well in that exam, and now I missed it. I was hospitalized for a few days. I was fine. They caught it early. So health-wise, no issues. But I missed the whole year. And now all my friends went ahead. I had no school to go to. And it was a huge sort of a, you know how they say you're going on this flow and then you're just thrown off the path and you're just stranded. And that's kind of how I felt. I felt like the world was over. And then it took some time. I went to my aunt's place in Oman, in Muscat, for a vacation for 3 months. And I actually, my uncle, her husband, gave me a book about future careers. I fell through it. And I realized I did not want to do engineering at all. That was not at all something that I wanted. But I never asked myself that question before, because I was on that path. And that's how it is. And so I took the few months to really think about what I wanted to do. My mom was really encouraging. She made me meet people from different walks of life to really figure out how life looks. I ended up realizing I did not want to do engineering. I did not want to do medical or like become a doctor. I really wanted to get into marketing, which was a shock for people in my family. But honestly, it's been one of the best decisions of my life. I haven't stayed in marketing. I went from marketing to product and to running a business, which is back into marketing in many ways. But I do feel like it does define you, and it has taught me that you don't have to walk the norm. You don't have to walk the path. And every time I've felt stuck, I have kind of stepped back and thought, wait, do I really want to do this because that's expected? Or is there something else I want to do? Every time it has been something else, it has been the right choice. So I think that does define me. I no longer feel the need. That sort of pushed me out. And now I no longer feel the need to follow the path at all, at any time.
That's amazing. I love that. So like you turned what was kind of a disaster, meningitis and missing your exam and being lost, into this wonderful opportunity to make a deeper, wiser choice.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think I was a child, but I feel like I was just so set in my way, and then it kind of snapped me out of it. So I think it was the best thing that happened to me. Otherwise, I would be doing engineering and maybe it would have taken me a lot longer to find my happy place.
That's amazing. So that is, tell us about another.
Yeah, so this one is my child. So my older child, Rohan, he's 10 years old, and he was diagnosed with autism at 18 months. And as a parent, you never want to hear that, right? You never want to hear a doctor say, hey, you know, I think he is on the spectrum. And it was huge for me. I still remember the moment. It was really hard. But I think more than that, what I really wanted to focus on was what happened was, I belong to a, I have a mindset of high achievement, and it's kind of how my whole, everybody around me is as well. And so there was a sudden moment of, oh my God, my child is on the spectrum. What does that mean for him? And is he going to succeed in his life? Is he going to be happy? Is he going to be able to get what he wants and have a purposeful life? And that was a huge struggle. It continues to be a struggle. But my answer was, yes, he is going to be successful and happy at whatever he wants to be. And it's my job and my husband's job to give him everything that's needed for that. And that's our mission now. And that's not been easy because there are no straightforward answers, right? Because now you have a neuroatypical child. So everything is different. At every point, the challenge has no clear-cut answer. And so you have to find it. You have to find different ways and be really creative about it. You have to be relentless in exploring. And I think that's made me an amazingly effective professional. I actually think I have completely changed as a person. Now, I don't think I could have run a startup without my child, because my child has made me this person who looks at a ball and has this mindset of, okay, fine, there's a wall. Now I have to find a way to go around it. Because for Rohan, I don't have a choice. I have to go around the wall. I have to find a way. And that has made me realize that when you have that mindset, you can always find a way. And if I can find it for him, it's become what I, well, a little bit of ASD speak, but it's a change of synaptic process now. My wiring has changed because of Rohan. So I do feel like, yes, he has a hard life, and I'm trying to make sure that he can overcome whatever difficulties he has, but he has made me a better person. He has opened opportunities for me, and he's really changed me. So that is the big moment of my life.
Oh my goodness. I can only imagine the moment you were told that your child at 18 months has autism. That's a hard moment. Yep. It's those moments where you question everything, all the dreams, everything you think mind about what it means to be a parent and what it is.
Yeah.
Well, and all these ideas that you have about what a good life is for your children.
They're all thrown out.
You know, you may know that I have a stepdaughter who is very disabled, and I've worked the last 18 years of my career have been focused on supporting people with disabilities, and I've built companies around it. I think it's relentless in exploring. And relentless. And that is exactly what it takes to be a founder. Relentless. You have to be unstoppably relentless. I'm not going to give up.
And you know, it's a gift, because with Rohan, I don't have a choice. I am committed to being the best mom possible. And it's just that love that you have for your child gives you that superhuman strength to sort of say, okay, nope. Okay, this is not working. I'm going to go to the next option. Next option. Yeah. Next option. Because not looking for an option is not an option.
You can't live with yourself, right?
Yeah. And so then you become that person. And so I actually feel if I have to credit one other person for everything that I will achieve in my life, it's Rohan. He made me this person.
So you talked about you're in 10th grade. You talked about 18 months when you're 18 months old. Is there any other moment you want to share with me?
Yeah, not as big, but I do think this deserves a mention. Me and my husband, we were both in Dell in Austin, Texas. Very settled life, very secure financially, growing the corporate ladder. And it was not enough, because we kept thinking a startup will give us a lot more opportunity to explore what's possible, have a bigger impact. And we were stuck in the U.S. immigration because we came from India, and Indians have a hard time immigrating because we are a lot of them. So it had been 20 years since 15 at that point, since we had been in the U.S. and we still didn't have a green card, which is your permanent residency, which allows you to start a business. And so we kept getting stuck in these. We had done our master's in the U.S. when we were 20 years old, but we were still very much there, approaching 40. And then we realized if we don't do it now, we are not going to be able to do it. One day we were driving and I said, you know what? I don't care that we have all this money and stability. I really think we need to do different. And he said, yep. And let's not think about it. Let's just do it. And so we moved to Canada and started our business. And we did it in April 2020, in the middle of the pandemic. We drove up to the border and people are like, what are you doing here? Like, why are you moving right now? But there was a now or never feel to it. And we just felt like we had to do it. And I think that's, again, one of those things that you have to leave your comfort zone. You have to self-select out at times and take that risk. It's been very hard because no startup life is easy. A challenge, but I wouldn't trade it. It's been amazing. And, you know, like, I think sometimes it's, again, it's kind of the norm thing, but also getting out of your comfort zone. You have to self-select into a different path, even if it's uncomfortable, despite the fact that it is that way. And that's the only way sometimes. I don't know what big lesson there is, but it has definitely given me the energy when you're feeling low and don't know where your company is going and are you even doing the right thing. You realize you've made a big sacrifice for this. You give up something. And so you get that extra energy to keep going.
I have a theory about founders, and it is simply that we can't help ourselves. We can't not do it. Like, we just can't, because it is so much easier, frankly.
Yeah,
if you get the safety of, a state of the safety of corporate, easier. It doesn't work for us.
My mom says that all the time. Every time I'm feeling frustrated and I'm talking to her, she's like, remember, you are the one who will always want to go upstream. You had no reason not to. So you chose this. So now do it. So it's kind of like that. You can't help yourself. This is you. This is your choice.
Yeah, exactly. It is terribly uncomfortable as a founder because there is so much upstream. I love that. We're always going upstream. You've got to work harder. You feel the resistance. Everything doesn't just flow your way all the time. But you learn that those feelings of angst, frustration, and exhaustion are signs of growth. And that's so counter to what we want to be, right? But those of us who are designed to do this, we can help.
I think the minute we get too comfortable, we'll get bored, right?
Totally. So tell us now about Little Lit, the world's first AI literacy platform for kids. What inspired you to build this company? And why is it so critical that children master AI early?
So I'll try to answer it all together. I was working in Microsoft before we started. I was doing a lot of AI work as Microsoft was kind of starting to join forces with OpenAI. We were doing a lot of experimentation of how we would use AI and building the future of work, future of products. My partner, who's also my co-founder, was building AI in Dell. We realized that everybody's building everything for the future of work. And who's the future of work? The kids. And so is anybody building for kids? And I felt like I want to teach that to my children. So I sat my kids down in front of ChatGPT. It lasted for like 2 minutes. So I was like, okay, that's not going to work. So I asked a few other parents, same thing, right? Like, because it's a chatbot, they ask a joke, they ask for like a riddle or like to write a small story, and that's about it. And then they get bored because it's not built for them. It might be exciting to you and me for what it can do, but it's not really built for kids. So that was the first aha moment where we realized there is a need to build something that is for kids that they can start learning, because the future is AI and kids are the future. And so kids need to know AI, but there's not much out there that can give them an early start. The other big one was Rohan, because I was trying to get him to learn some math problems and he had no attention or interest in it. I think he's a child, probably nothing to do with autism. But either way, he loved space. And so I asked ChatGPT to generate some math word problems about space. And of course, it did it in a second. And then he actually stuck with it for 15 minutes. And we went through like 6 or 7 of them. And so that was a big aha moment too, which is that if we gave kids the ability to create their own personalized learning content using AI, because with AI it's so possible now, they're going to learn a lot more. They're going to stick with it a lot more. This is a very useful tool. This is not just this vague future, oh, your future is AI, so learn it today. This is, you can actually use it today as well. And so I think that kind of combined and gave us the energy to start Lit. And we realized early on that it has to be a combination of tools and education, because they have to also learn about AI. They can't just start using it and be thrown into the deep end. We have to give them the mental models and the ethical frameworks for it. The curriculum was always AI literacy first in that sense, that there has to be a curriculum or AI literacy component before they start going wild with it. So that's why Little It combines AI literacy with AI tools, both creative and learning. I don't know if I answered it, but...
No, yes, no, I was exploring your website and it is quite extraordinary. All the different things your product offers for kids. And when I think about a business getting started and ramping up and creating that customer engagement, I mean, these are kids. They're either going to use it or they're going to walk away, right? So that journey, that customer journey, that child journey to be delicious and fun and engaging. And of course, you have an agenda where you want them to also learn and not just, you know, TikTok all day, right? Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about the whole child AI framework, pillars, how it shapes the journey from awareness, understanding for young learners, and how it, like, at the, you know, I was noticing you have certification or something. Like, tell us about that too. So there's an endpoint, but the journey itself is the part.
Yeah, lots to unpack there, but you're absolutely right. I think we started with thinking about how do we want to introduce kids to AI. So we want to do it, but to your point, we want to also make sure they have the framework, the mental model that is in place so they use it right. Because we are all concerned about the ethical implications of AI, rightly so. It is a double-edged sword. So when you give it in the hand of a child, it's even more important that we do it right, that we do it in the way that is really safe, that is really responsible. And that meant that a child needs to approach AI with the right mental model. We've always been very mental model focused. So that's what drove us to exploring different mental models. And we were very inspired by Dr. Edith Ackerman's Whole Child AI. It's something I've always read about. I think the Chan Zuckerberg initiative started using it early on when they were doing some things in education. The core concept is a child doesn't exist in a silo. They exist in their entire life. So if you want to teach them something, it has to connect with their whole life. And that sort of really resonated with this whole responsible ethical AI piece with us. So the way we teach a child AI is through our Whole Child AI framework. That's what we built. And that's how the whole app is built around embodying that framework. How it starts is, it starts with teaching kids what is AI, recognizing that when you're talking to Google Home or Alexa, it is AI. Even a two-year-old is talking to them now. So they need to learn early. Many a times, that's the first technology they're touching, AI. They're talking to it. So it's important that they recognize AI for what it is. I'm always asking my daughter, what do you think? Is this AI? Whenever we are seeing something on the TV or on Instagram or anywhere else, she has now built a discerning eye. She knows it's a trick question, so she's going to really give some thought into it. And then she'll say no or yes, and why. And that's an important skill for kids to build, because they need to recognize AI, right?
Yeah.
So that's where it starts. And then it demystifies it for them. It starts with talking about, okay, what is inside of it? This is not magic. If you open the hood, there's all these different pieces of technology coming together. And even though they're kids, they are able to understand it. So we really made it simple and child-leveled. And that was the big reason for developing a curriculum, because there are courses out there to learn AI, but they're not things that kids can understand. We wanted to make it simple for them, make it play-based. So when you learn to make a superhero sticker, and then you're taught, how did AI make the superhero sticker? It's because it has looked at a lot of superhero images, and you are giving it these specific prompts, and it's pulling from that. That's how it created your sticker. That's how it made its choices. It's simple ways like that that we teach them what AI is all about. And then the last piece is the ethics and the safety and the responsible use. So understanding that if you created an art with AI, you have to declare it and say this is AI assisted. There's nothing wrong with it. That is how your world is going to be. And absolutely use AI to do things. But make sure you understand what part is human and what part is technology, and call it out. When you're writing an essay with AI, remember all other kids can do it too. So all 50 kids are going to write an essay with AI. who's going to stand out? It's going to be the one with the most original thought, the most strong opinion. When you're prompting AI to write that essay, you still need to have your own point of view. You still need to do your own research. You still need to analyze and have a voice. So those are the kinds of things that we are really talking to them about. And then at the base level, of course, talking about AI safety. This is a technology that can mask itself as human more and more as we go. It's starting to become really, really hard even for us to tell what's AI and what's not. And so really understanding your boundaries and not sharing your private, you know, data with AI systems. How do you sort of teach kids that? How do you kind of teach them to recognize the red flags? So there's a lot to it. I don't think we have all the answers yet, but it is a start. And we will continue building to give kids as much information, as much exposure, as much experimentation as possible in early years so that they are set up for success.
Well, you know, I'm so fascinated by Little Lit because it is, as I'm learning about it online, I'm learning that engaging for a lot of kids. I'm going to talk about some statistics in a moment. But also, I worry when we as adults have limited experiences with AI and all we know is ChatGPT, we use it in moments where we're feeling lazy and ask it to do things for us so that we don't have to do the hard critical thinking ourselves. And we haven't all learned how to do things with AI that actually require a fair amount of critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that it isn't just a lazy tool, but it is a real tool that can help us all in lots of ways. I was reading on your website, your platform is, I could go and get it for my children, but you also make it available to school systems.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not just, you know, a play thing. It's helping real returns. Results on your website say 3 times faster grade level progress,
yes.
45% increase in retention and recall, 33% improvement in test scores within 6 weeks. This isn't just AI to help us get dumber and lazier. Oh. This is AI to help us become better learners.
I didn't talk about AI tutors a lot, but we do have deeply personalized AI tutors. And that's what, so we offer schools 2 things. One is the AI literacy, but then the other is AI tutors. And the reason for all that big leaps that you see in the data that you quoted, which we've worked with our customers to essentially run assessments and get that data, is when a child personalizes or when a teacher personalizes for the child, a teacher who deeply understands what makes that child tick, what makes that child successful. Once we have created systems and models where teachers can essentially share how a child learns, how does the child best show their work? What kind of information and load processing can a child handle? What are the child's interests? What are the child's specific frameworks like personality styles or learning styles for absorbing information? Create lessons and create content which adapts to that. It's unique for each child. We have about 84 different personas. And then within that, there's infinite combinations. So the algorithm and the AI models are giving kids what they hopefully, and we are learning, of course, little, we are still in the process of evolving. My dream is that for every child, we understand their neural frameworks, mm-hmm. how they learn best. And we are able to use AI to match them in the moment and give them the best possible chance for absorbing something. That's my dream. And that's kind of where we are going with this.
I love it. That is a beautiful vision. In many ways, that interactive data going back and forth is a system learning
mm-hmm.
and observing and analyzing and understanding better in a way that a human really couldn't analyze all of that
stuff
and then adapt to that child.
In real time too, and we have to think about those teachers. They have 20 kids in the classroom. And sure, we are asking them to kind of personalize and we are asking them to pay attention to every child and we are giving them some tools, but it's still a lot. And so our secret, but our hope is that if we give it direct to student, then the teacher has to set a profile once, revisit it regularly as the child evolves. But beyond that, the content is getting created directly for the child. It's interacting with the child. So it's becoming more and more feasible for teachers to really personalize and then focus on social-emotional aspects of learning, which AI can never do. So you're going to need humans for that.
Yes. So I'm going to read off some more of your amazing traction. I think it's extraordinary. I think it's fascinating, Dipti, that you are not an engineer. At the end of the day,
equally,
because your brain, right, like works like an engineer. You've designed a system so that it could meet all these needs, and you've done it with the marketing piece, understanding what people need and want and what they need to stay engaged. This program has 80 plus literacy skills, very specific literacy skills. Mm-hmm. 10,000 plus kids have mastered core AI concepts, from using AI for school to creative projects. Kids gain real world confidence in AI tools. 10,000 kids, 3,000 have used AI tutor sessions, and 100,000 with the STEAM AI projects powered by AI. So kids have created books, music, art, STEM AI experience, and little projects using the AI. I just think it's amazing.
And it shows that if you give kids tools, they can do amazing things. And that's the, I think the 100,000 is my favorite number. It's grown now since we put it on the website. But the fact is that you give a child a structure, tools, they can do amazing things.
Amazing things. You know, I believe that kids, like, well, I'm not just the only one who believes this. Like, children's brains are designed to learn. And as adults, we just have to learn how to get out of the way so they can learn, right?
Yep.
And so, like, this is evidence to me that kids are using it because they want to, like, learning, and they're finding this to be a fun way to do that. Wow. So what is driving your progress? How are you getting this traction? And I, you know, at the beginning of the call, you said, you know, I wake up on the first day of every month and kind of give myself a little bit of break because now I need to start over to the beginning of the month again and start counting sales again, right?
Yep.
How have you gotten here? What's your recipe?
I think, so you said that I'm not an engineer and I haven't really been in marketing for a long time too. I'm a product person for the last more than a decade. We built something that we were instinctively drawn towards as parents, and we asked a lot of feedback loops. We constantly asked questions with parents, teachers, and kids. Are they liking it? Are they still on? Are they getting off? Why? What part are they liking? What are they not liking? What is a teacher comfortable with? What is a parent worrying about? So we asked a lot of questions from a product mindset. It's a product-led growth is how I would define it. We have been able to iterate and pivot 7-8 times in the 18 months of our journey because we have realized that that's not quite right. And we keep doing it. That is creating a product which is working. And so our conversion rates are great. And I continue to, you know, I wouldn't call them great. They're good. We want to make them great, right? But
always better.
How can we get better? Once someone tries it, our success of, you know, getting them in and getting them start using it and paying for it has been really good because we have constantly tried to create a product that kids really want, parents really want, and teachers really want. So I think that's the first piece is what's working for us is once I have someone, I'm getting them. Once they're in the door, we are converting a lot. We should be doing better, but we are converting a good amount. If we are not, then we are constantly asking questions and looking at data, and we are realizing that, oops, this is the problem. Like right now, I'm dealing with this problem this week about text-to-speech. So for younger kids, everything gets read off because they need it to be read off. But certain pieces of our tutor have a lot of content, and the text-to-speech takes forever to load. Kids are losing patience. So our data is showing us that that's not working. A 7-year-old is going to be like, okay, I'm out. So we have to figure out how to stream that text to speech to get a faster turnaround. These are small examples, but that's for something I'm dealing with this week. But we have to keep doing that. And that's the first piece. The second one is the fact that I understood that we don't understand marketing. So we have Jenny, we have Suparna, two of our big advisors in the space of marketing that are helping us understand how to build a funnel, how to build awareness. We are creating a category. So it's been exciting, but also very hard. It's also an opportunity. So we focused more on SEO than Google Ads, for example, because we recognize through our experts that we are building a category, which means that Google Ads or throwing money at it, it's not going to solve things. We are going to have to rather start with awareness and education, and that's paying off. We're getting a lot of organic traction because now we have enough information out there and we're constantly educating students and schools and parents about AI through our content. Content-based outreach, content-based marketing has been huge. I think those are the two things, if that makes sense.
Amazing. You just gave so much wonderful information. I have to tell you that I'm always enamored. So I'm like, I started in corporate, but I jumped out pretty early on. And whenever I see a founder with that ability to measure the funnel, to measure the product, to measure the customer journey, because that is what makes it or breaks it. You would never know why that 7-year-old left if you weren't measuring every single thing. Then you could find out, oh, it's the text to speech, it's taking too long. Yep. So you must have some pretty good, what's your tech stack? Like, what do you do to measure all that?
We use a lot of free tools because we are a startup. Because I'm from big tech, I feel like data was always a huge piece. We didn't start as kids, right? I started when I was 38. So we were like, okay, we have a disadvantage, but what is the advantage? And the fact is that we know how the big tech, big companies do it. And we did it. So we instrumented data right from the get-go. I would definitely say that's the first thing. So from a stack perspective, we have Pendo, we have MS Clarity, which is a huge one. I definitely want to plug that. It's a Microsoft tool. It is free. It is anonymized. And it's great for qualitative research. Because for startups, our scale is not at a stage where data can give you great insights. Because it has to be in, certain things have to be in hundreds of thousands before you can see statistically significant trends. But when it comes to MS Clarity, we can actually view sessions after sessions after session. So whenever I have a little downtime and we have this user researcher who contracts in just out of the generosity of her heart, she'll look at MS Clarity like feeds after feeds after feeds of what people are doing. It literally records your whole session. So it's not as smart as some of the bigger, like Amplitude is great, but we can't afford it right now. MS Clarity and Pendo together is the tech stack that gives us all the data instrumentation. And we do take the effort to making sure that whenever a new feature is released, we are putting in the instrumentation at the get-go so that we can actually capture the data. So that's kind of the stack, I think.
I think it's great. And it's essential for every business when you're starting to get that data. What are your KPIs that are helping drive your business? What's helping you understand what's working, not working? Yeah. I love that you said that you pivoted 6, 7, 8 times. Yep. And you only knew to do that, not because you felt like it, but because the data told you.
Yeah, the data told me it wasn't working.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. So I could talk to you forever about your company and what you're doing. One question before we have to move towards close. How are you funding this operation?
So far we are bootstrapped entirely.
For you. Well,
yeah, we put in some amount of money and now we are at a point where at least our base everyday expenses are coming out of the revenue that we are generating. So this is a good time to raise, of course. So now we are looking to scale, and for that, we will fundraise.
I just love it because you're not trying to fundraise when you have nothing and you're going to give away your whole company to raise a few million bucks. Now you can go raise money and you have so much value already in your company. It's already producing returns for you, if it's break even, right? Before you scale. This is the wish that I have for every founder, every woman founder.
I'm glad you said that because sometimes I doubt the way we did it. Sometimes I feel like maybe we should have raised first. All these people who raise on a slide deck. It's amazing, right? Like it's exciting to have that kind of resources. But yeah, I think it's definitely made us scrappy and made us feasible from the get-go.
I mean, the thing is now you run tight, right? Like, so you're going to keep running tight. You learn how to really do it right. And you don't think you can just spend your way through it.
Yeah. Because it's my own money so far. So it's
I know, right? Yeah. You're really, it's important, right? I get it.
Exactly.
I totally get it. Yeah. All right. So if you could whisper one piece of truth into the ear of every woman founder navigating doubt at the edge of a big leap, what?
That's a big one. I think community, I would say. Yes. Yeah. Because I do feel like you said, you know, the doubt piece and things like that. And I think it's both psychological, but also practical. I feel like my village, you know how they say it takes a village to raise a child. And I know I'm raising Rohan for sure with my village. I think there's all these amazing people who will help you if you ask, who will help you both practically. Like I talked about both Jenny and Suparna bringing in amazing insight, or my SEO team bringing in amazing technical insight. And I found them through community, but also the psychological terms of, hey, you know, I am fundraising now, but am I too small? Am I not big enough? Am I not making, you know, all the imposter syndrome things that we have in our head, or the days when your sales are not going great, or the days when you lose a customer, or the days that you are stuck in a product bug trail that just won't burn down. Right? There's all these different points where you need sounding boards, and startups are isolating. It's just me and Sachin, and we are constantly an echo chamber. So it's helped us to have a lot of other people to lean on, to sort of say, hey, I'm having a bad day because this happened. They giving wisdom and they giving sort of points of insight through their life and professional experiences. Women in AI has been a huge, huge one for me. I cannot not say it, right? So there's been amazing women that have come through that platform. So I think building your community is how you will survive this grind, because it's going to be quite lonely for a long time.
Yeah, quite lonely for a long time. That's right. I love that you said community, because I do think for women in particular, we need community.
Yep.
And we need communities of women who are doing entrepreneurship, that are out there taking these risks, raising money, bootstrapping, whatever it is, that aren't in the corporate, that don't really understand that impulse that I can't help myself.
Yep.
I gotta go out and do this. Beautiful. I love it. And I agree with you. The Women in AI community is extraordinary, led by Jenny and Rue. I highly recommend everybody listening to check it out, even if you're not an AI expert. Jenny is one of the kindest, most gentle, generous,
Crazy
smart human, so ever.
Yep. We are so lucky to have found her.
So that's great advice for us all to go and find ourselves some advisors, find ourselves some groups that we can be a part of. How can our listeners find you, find your product? Where can listeners go to find you?
Yeah, so it's littlelit.ai. For parents out there who are listeners looking for their kids, just go ahead, sign up. There's a free trial. Give it a shot. If it doesn't work, because now we are going through COCO, I would love for you to let me know why and why it broke, because that's the most important insight that I can get if you don't end up buying it and liking it. And for schools, we work on both the public school side, but we also focus a lot on private schools, micro schools, homeschools. So there's the entire plethora of schools out there. So if you are looking for a demo, if you're looking after schools, after school enrichment programs, if you're looking to understand more about how it can help, we have a demo on the site as well. So you can go to educators and book a demo.
This is a very affordable program. The annual plan is just $5 a month if you bill annually. And it starts with a free trial so you can get right in. You know any children, the age range again?
K through 8 is our sweet spot.
Okay, so K through 8, K through 12, there's no reason not to give this a shot and try it out. Really think about your school where your kids go to school. Right now, aren't the schools now, especially this public schools now, required to have an AI curriculum?
It's a great start in a way. I think the government just signed an executive order which says that AI is now mandatory for K through 12 to learn. The pathways and the blueprints are not quite there yet, but that's where we come in. I feel we have built the curriculum. We have the child safe tools. We are COPA compliant. So that's kind of where I think schools will and are already starting to look for value, feasible solutions to how to bring that in. And the form factor is important too. So I know schools are scared about how do we add one more subject? It's not that easy to just put something in. And the funding budgets are tight. The resources are tight. So that's where I think something like Little Lit has a lot of flexibility. So we have schools using it as an elective, as an after-school enrichment, as a field trip. We work in all form factors.
I love it. It's making me think about every school that my kids have ever been a part of, right? And how could I make an introduction to those schools? I'm thinking about, I'm on a board of a library. As you're thinking, our listeners, this is a great program to get out into the world and let it be a woman-led company that brings this to the world, because somebody's going to do it. And, you know, 2% of venture funding ends up going to women. That means 98% goes to men. I think that women have a particular sensitivity and awareness around education, and that we should support you and Little Lit and get this train out of the, you know, going to the moon.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think all support is what we need right now. I have learned early that help is absolutely essential.
Yeah. It sounds like you're going to be raising money soon.
Yes.
Yeah. If you are an investor, an angel investor or a venture fund, by all means, reach out to Dipti or reach out to me and I'd be happy to put you in touch with her. This is really incredible traction, a really good opportunity for anyone who wants to invest in a business that is a force for good.
Yay.
Yep. So Dipti, thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for being on the Wisdom of Women show. Thank you for illuminating the path to unlocking opportunities for growth and prosperity for all sorts of women listening today. We value you and your wisdom.
Thank you. Immensely enjoying and self-reflecting, because your questions are so deep. I also want a chance to ask you all those questions.
We can do it the other way
around.
So everybody listening, sure to follow, like, or share the Wisdom of Women show on whatever your favorite listening or viewing platform is. Remember, infuse more of your wisdom in your business and start by taking the growth readiness quiz at aforceforgood.biz/quiz and uncover where your site is needed most. The world is made better by women. Let's go make the world a better place.
Yep. Yes.